Blog Talk Radio.
That was Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones with Satisfaction, and this is James Dick, North Florida Writer Live, on a Friday night at 7 p.m. And you say, what are we doing here on Friday night? It's time for Margaritaville. I mean, really, folks, the government closed a couple hours ago, so you don't have to worry about anything until Monday. So maybe it's time to waste away a little bit in Margaritaville, so maybe after the show we'll consider that. But first, we got some things we want to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about housing and urban development. You know, that big monstrosity of a department that wants to tell us how to live and where. You know, it used to be that housing and urban development, or housing for the government, was designed to help those in need find suitable place to live and help them out, and then hopefully get them on their feet. But not any longer. We've got a permanent class that seems to want to stay on the dole. And the government's very willing to help them do that. But not only are they willing to do that, they're willing to help them be upwardly mobile, even though they don't have the money for it. And the rest of us pay for it in many ways. So tonight, we're very fortunate to have back one of my favorite guests, Darlene Pafalo. Darlene is a Gainesville, Florida realtor, been in the business a long time and knows the ins and outs of everything. And I'll bring her on in just a minute. But first, I want to go over the pictures for the show because I think pictures tell a thousand words. First of all, there's a picture of Darlene with Mr. Lucky. Darlene is an animal lover, and she particularly likes white cats. Actually, she likes all cats. I've got a bunch, too, so they're interesting animals. They really are. And she also contributes to help cats in need and animals in need that are searching for a home with some of the earnings from her sales in real estate. Then there is a picture of a single-family home, the great American dream, living in your own home. Or maybe it's a townhouse that you like in the city. Another picture. But then there's all these rules and regulations that govern everything. But even so, some of us still want to live on a rural farm, and even if we have to put up with some crazy rules sometimes. And then there are condos in the city as well, high-rise condos. There's a little bit of something for everyone. But we've got some problems with that today, and Darlene's going to help explain some of that in just a minute. Lastly, though, I want to make clear that you all understand that I always put the picture of the cross, the Bible, and the flag up because I want to remind everybody that America was created under God. We were created that way, and a lot of people don't want to believe it anymore, but it's so. You read our history. You look back at George Washington's proclamations, read the Declaration of Independence. It's very clear that our founders had a deep belief in an almighty being that had much more power than we did and that we better listen to him and try to follow his way. And sometimes we have big trouble with that. But anyway, I'm going to bring on Darlene now, and we're going to go on with the show. Here we go. Darlene, are you with me?
I am with you loud and clear. Thank you, thank you, thank you for an opportunity to speak to everybody tonight.
Oh, I love having it when you come on with us. And I thought we might have storm problems tonight, but once again, the weatherman, he predicts global warming, but he can't tell you a thing about what's going to happen in 4 hours because out my way, it's perfectly clear right now. Listen, before we get started, give us a little shout-out about yourself. Tell us about your real estate career and you know, your loans, just a little bit about what you like, and so the audience gets to know you just a little bit.
I'd be happy to do that. I go pretty far back in real estate, as many of you may know, but a lot of you don't. I like to talk to the new people, basically, in the business, because I got my real estate in 1973, so y'all can do the math on that. That's your job to do. I got into real estate when they didn't even have what they had before was real estate books printing. We used to go from office to office and mimeograph our listings and take them to the offices so the other offices would have our listings in their office so they could sell them. There wasn't much on co-broking at that time either. You prayed that you sold your own listing, not like it is now. Everybody cooperates. And it's come a long way, big changes, good times, bad times. When interest rates in the early 80s were up to 19%, 21%, and a lot of people, I laugh now because when the young families that you're working with and they go, I don't want to buy a house, it's 4.5%. So I just laugh because it's so funny. Today, interest rates are really good, but not 19 and 20%. At that time, nothing sold. But also at that time, the interest rates were assumable without qualifying. And then when the interest rates went up, as they did, a little bit of history here on real estate, then the lenders got smart and said, you're not going to be able to assume these mortgages because they were low interest rate. So then it became non-assumable mortgages. So the only thing that hasn't changed were the addresses. That's the only thing that stays the same most of the time. But everything else in the real estate industry has changed quite a bit. But the good news is in today's market, in the Gainesville, Alachua, High Springs area, and in this area, prices are going up, not drastically like they did before the crash. But they're moving up from where they were. That's the good news for people that actually bought in right before the crash, as we all know about.
Sure. And that's always I was in the market. I wasn't in the market because I got out of it and waited a while. But back in those late quarter years you were talking about, mm-hmm. I remember when every day the rates would go up. You know, we were thinking about it, and we just put it off for a couple of years. When we wanted to move one time, mm-hmm. and it turned out all right in the end. But, boy, there were some trying times for a lot of people. And I was in Maryland at the time. I had a lot of friends in real estate, and they were hurting because nothing was moving. And that's pretty scary when you live on a commission, for sure. Tell us about your love of animals a little bit for just a second.
Oh, you know, that's actually my first love for animals. My second love is because I have to make a living. But if I had a 100-acre farm, I'd probably have more dogs and horses. And I love all animals, and I think they need a voice today. You know, when I see things where people are abusing animals, I just get furious with that because, you know, they don't have a voice. They look at us with their loving eyes, and they love us. And, of course,
yes.
And that's, you know, that's what warms my heart. I have 7 kitties. I adopted one 2.5 years ago, just to give a little love story here. He was 13 and a half when I adopted him, and the owners wanted to put him to sleep, and I got him at Gainesville Pet Rescue, which is a local rescue group here. And ended up, when I did adopt him, now it's been over 2 years, he's doing fabulous.
Wow.
And when I did adopt him, though, I looked at his birth date, and it was March the 15th, and my birthday is March the 18th. Not the same year, of course, but he's just been a lover. He waits for his treats. He jumps on the bed when I'm ready to go to sleep at night, and he talks all the time, so he's got a good life ahead of him, and all my other kitties just look at him and adore him, too. So they're animals. They're older. You have to look at them and say, you know, they need a life forever, too. And the people that had him just were too old to take care of him. And Dr. Patty Gordon, who is the all-cats doctor here that I go to, who does fabulous work not only for people that have cats, but she also works with the homeless people that have cats that she takes care of, too. So that's a little heads up. I also, as you mentioned, I give $50 per transaction to local animal shelters and groups like that. And I just invested with the fire department here in Gainesville, Florida, and gave all the fire departments oxygen masks for animals, and did a special presentation to the city of Gainesville last year. And the fire chief was there, and it was I was honored that he was there. And these are oxygen masks that they can use over and over again if they go to a home fire and there are animals in there. They're strong oxygen masks, and they can use them over and over again. If they go to a house and there are animals in there, cats or dogs or whatever, if they use a human's oxygen mask, they have to throw them away. But these are because they're stronger too, and they just wash them out. So that was one of the things that I'm going to do it also for Alachua County this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, Darlene. You know, Mahatma Gandhi said years ago that you can judge a society by the way it cares for its animals.
Mm-hmm.
And if America's judged by Darlene Pafalo, we don't have any problems at all, I can tell you. I'm an animal lover, too, so I love hearing that because we've taken it a lot. And, you know, they really appreciate you when you take care of them, when you bring them in like that, when they've had a rough life. They really, really take care of you, really. And they're good for your heart. So that's wonderful. But let's get down to business here a little bit. You know, we're facing so many problems with big government in so many ways. I mean, our kids are being indoctrinated with Common Core. Our health care, which was the best in the world, is rapidly being destroyed. Our freedoms are being just dismantled. You know, freedom of speech, our freedom of religion, all this political correctness that's going on is just killing us as a society. The number one responsibility of government is, security and protection and the borders, and we don't do anything with that. And on top of everything else now, we've got the Department of Housing and Urban Development that is coming in and playing all kinds of games via regulations, administrative regulations, not by congressional law, that's dictating a lot of things. And two things I want to talk about tonight. First, I want you to tell us what you know about what's going on with the way they're trying to manipulate how communities are made up. Because there's a lot of stuff going on right now about, you know, communities having quotas by types of people to make everything the same all over the country. And I don't know how much of it's true. I read a lot about it, or how much of it is just made up. But what can you tell us about that, if anything, Darlene?
Well, what I
know. Is anything impacting you with that here?
Yeah, what I know for sure is it's called the word that our county commission doesn't want to use, but what it is it's called inclusionary housing. And that's been on the books on and off for probably 10 or 15 years. And here's what it says in inclusionary housing. They call it fair housing, which is a bunch of garbage. We know that. But here, let's just suppose you're a developer and you have, 500, 400, 300 acres, and you're going to develop it. What inclusionary housing states is that a certain percent of those houses that you're going to develop as a developer has to be affordable housing. But, of course, nobody knows what affordable housing is. I mean, do you know what affordable housing means? No, nobody does.
I think it means whatever they want it to mean.
That's exactly right.
And
what
I
can afford is affordable to me, but it may not be affordable
exactly
to the people 5 miles away from me. And beside that,
right,
we have a couple new developments here. One is called Oakmont. And those houses, as they start at three and go up to $700,000 or so. They're all custom homes.
Okay.
The newer development here in Gainesville area. Now, if that was developed the way our county commission, a few of them want, 20% or 10% of those houses would, for their calling affordable, would be $70,000 or $80,000 next to a $500,000
gotcha
house or more. That's what they want to do. Now,
well, and what about the feds, though? Because they're in it too, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Obama wanted
this. Are the feds also into this big time? Yeah.
Yeah, it started, Obama's been pushing it for the past couple years now, but it even started, like I say, 10 or 15, at least 10 years ago. But but he started it and he was trying to push it. There hasn't been anything said for maybe 6 months or 9 months now because of the election coming up, you know. But that's what they wanted to try to do to make it fair for everybody. But the other thing you have to remember when you think of things like this, when a developer is developing and his land costs are just $70,000 or $80,000 if or more for just the lot. So who's paying for the house that's going to be built? Guess who? The surrounding houses, because the developer is not going to lose money.
Of course.
You know, they think it's, oh, well, the developer.
Well, it's the same old game about, you know, it's the same old thing about corporate taxes. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that corporations don't pay taxes. It's just a cost of doing business that they put in the price of their product. And so the same would apply with developers and their in the housing, sure. I mean, they can't eat that. You know.
Well, I heard there's a new thing.
Well,
go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go
ahead. Heard there's a new thing. I was listening to a gentleman that was speaking in front of the builders meeting Thursday at their meeting for a luncheon, and he's running for, Kevin is his name, he's running for county commissioner against Mr. Mike Byerly, if all the listeners are listening. And he is very good. He's a preacher, but he understands business. And he was very sensible because some of the things that Mike Byerly is pushing now for the builders and the developers will stop 100% of the builders in this county to do anything, what they're asking them to do. There's also things that they're asking them to do, even with sprinkler systems on houses. If you ever get a chance to talk to our representative Keith Perry, there's a study being done. It has been done, and Keith Perry is a phenomenal man. He's also running for state senate also next year, so he'll be a good senator too. But about the water consumption and things like that, it's not as drastic as people think, even with the sprinkler systems. I mean, 1/8 of 1 inch you'll save, and half of it goes up into the air water when you sprinkle your lawn and things like that. Plus, they're may require houses to have sprinkler systems in it for fire, and you can imagine what that cost is going to be for new homes.
I got you. I've got a little bit of mixed viewpoint on Mr. Thorpe. I know you're talking about because of my issues in the wetlands, but on the other hand, there's some give and take that has to be done on everything. I mean, that's the problem we have in the whole country right now. Mm-hmm. There's very little ability for people to come to some kind of in between on things. It's either all or nothing, and as long as we operate that way, it becomes a real problem. Because I'm talking about this Weyerhaeuser thing because it's they don't exactly have the best reputation around the rest of the world with what they do. But we'll see how that goes. But sure, you know, I think we need competition. Certainly, there's a lot of problems with what government says needs to be done when they don't even really have to think through about what that means. I'm very concerned about that because sprinklers in a house, I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, nobody can afford that. I mean, and the other thing is, and I think Florida needs to look at this a lot more. You know, I spent a lot of time in Arizona, and they, you know, they do a lot of zero-scape landscaping. You know, you take the natural environs and you create it. That's what I like living out where I do, because we don't have to worry. Well, I got some of the prettiest weeds in the world to mow, and I don't have the community association coming around measuring my grass. So that's kind of the blessing of living in a rural area. But on the other hand, you don't want to live next door to a guy who's got 7 junk cars in the front yard either. You know, there's problems with, there are two extremes we tend to run into. And unfortunately, we tend to go way too far in a lot of different directions sometimes. But I think that's certainly, I guess it does concern me that, you know, we do have to make sure that people are able to live in something they can afford, but at the same time, they've got to be willing to work for it. And that's the part that really upsets me. We've got people that are sitting home, and the government's putting them in housing, They're giving them food stamps. They're giving them all this stuff. They've been on it for years and years and years, and and there's nothing done to try to change their lifestyle because they have no incentive to do so. And that's what really concerns me about putting, you know, I'll just say it like it is, Section 8 housing in the middle of some expensive subdivision where people that worked hard to earn the money to buy those homes, once their property values plummet, and they're stuck in a bad situation that they really can't get out of. And that's what really concerns you about HUD, because they're sticking their nose where they don't belong.
Well, one of the other things, just to touch on this too, that's why I worked with Habitat for Humanities. And one of the nice things about Habitat is, and I've worked with them for years, is that the people that are building the houses and working, they have to put so many hours in before they're even eligible to get a house. So they put in their time and their effort and everything else. And they appreciate it also. I can tell you from experience that I have walked in houses, looking at them and showing them, and if they're rentals, I pull up, meet my client there or bring them there, and they're rental houses, and it could even be a short sale or something like that, who knows, but not all the time. It's just a rental. And I pull up to these places, and you know they're on food stamps because they're not paying their rent or it's, you know, things like that. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they have
they have newer
cars in the driveway than I was driving, number two. And number three, their TVs in their house, there was not one, but they were probably 4 or 5 feet. You know, one of those massive that I don't even have. I have a 21-inch TV, you know, 24-inch. But because there's no accountability, there's no accountability as to why do you not have a job. You're physically able to have a job. There is nothing for them. They take these food stamps, and they don't even call them that anymore. I remember in my days growing up, you wouldn't even use the word. You were embarrassed to have food stamps. That's why they changed it. I forget what it is
now. And you
know,
EBT cards.
Okay.
EBT cards. Yeah, and matter of fact, you know, they've had riots in certain cities when the computers go down, and they're lined up with all the seafood and steaks in their basket at the checkout with their EBT cards, and they can't check out. They've had some problems. It's not funny, but there are some things out in Los Angeles and places where that's happened. It's you know, if you're somebody else in the line, watch out, because these people get pretty rough.
Well,
but,
I mean, they,
yeah, it's just not right. I mean,
I've done it. I've seen it in Publix. I pulled up. I stand behind people, and I remember this one young girl. I think she was a cashier, probably if she was 21. She was old. And I see this woman in front of me, and she's got crab legs and something else, and she pulls out this thing and gives it to
the stuff you
can't
buy.
Said, yeah, and I, after, of course, she checked her out and everything, I said, I'm sorry, but that lady, was that for food stamps, and you, she had crab legs and stuff like that? And she says, uh-huh. She says, it dry, and this girl's 21 years old. She says, I can't stand when they do that. They're supposed to, that's not supposed to go through the system, number one, that they scan it.
No.
But, you know, you work and I work
out
of fanny
limit
ball.
To very, very basics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they ought to work on absolute basics on and based upon need, and but you know, get, you need to be reviewed periodically that you're doing something to get away from the need. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, because you know, my dad died when I was a young boy, and we weren't destitute by any means. My mother wouldn't take help from anybody. You know, I mean, she just, it was just her way. You know, she was very proud, and she used to, I remember when I got older, she got so upset when all these things changed. You know, 1964 was the red letter year with the Great Society, and that's when things really got out of hand. And, you know, she couldn't believe it. She'd go to the store. She said, I save my money. I balance my checkbook, and I go in to shop, and I got to stand in line and watch this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, good Lord, if she was back today, oh, my Lord. But it's you know, it's a mess, and we've got problems, and I'm just hoping
there's too
that,
much, as you know, and most of the probably listeners on this know, excuse me, wait a second, frog in my throat, and he didn't pay for it to be there. But one of the things that there used to be years ago when you were on unemployment, And you had to go and go and apply for jobs, fill out paperwork, and it was only good for, I think it was 9 months. Now it's 3 years.
Yeah, that's right.
And there's no accountability.
They're on it almost permanently, so.
Yeah.
They don't even have to go
anywhere.
I would
love it.
They can sit home and make up. They can sit home and make up two or three things and put it on a sheet, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people used to have to go knock on doors, and you had to pretty well prove what you'd been doing, you know, as it should be. I mean, that's the way it should be. But I don't know where we're headed with all this, but.
Way back, go back to the past again. When I came as a cocktail waitress. I was a cocktail waitress when I moved to Florida in 1968. And I remember went to one place to work and then another place. And then the place I was working at closed up. It was called the casino in Fort Lauderdale on the beach. And I thought, well, I'll go for unemployment. I went one day and I said to myself, Darlene, this is ridiculous. You can get a job. And guess what? I got a job. But people don't want to just get a job anymore. They want to get $15 an hour. I wasn't worth $15. Nobody's worth $15 an hour.
No, you got it. Well, what people don't understand about business is that, you know, somebody hires you because they think that you can make money for them so that you're just not an outlay. And and these people, they don't get that. You know, they think it's like, oh, well, you know, he's a rich guy. It's no problem. That's not the point. The point is, if he's going to pay you $12 an hour, whatever it is, you're supposed to be bringing in, you know, 4, 5, 10 times that much every hour you work in value.
Exactly.
And if you don't,
not only that, it's a starting salary. You work your way up. And you know what? If they're not treating you well, which I've heard, you know, a lot of places in Alachua County when some of these people go in front of the county commission, I understand. But you know what? You quit and you find another job. You don't demand somebody to pay you that money if you're not worth it and they're not worth maybe working for.
Well, that's a good point right there, absolutely. But you know, it's a different world, Darlene. But let's get back to one. Let me ask you something. I don't know if you can deal with this, but let me try.
Mm-hmm.
I've been, and of course, you're in Gainesville. I know you follow things, what's going on in local politics. But, you know, a couple of months ago, it came out that Gainesville was looking at this thing about some kind of a deal with the refugees coming over here. I know it was on Bob Rose's show one day, and they talked about it, but they never really got anywhere. What's the Todd Chase, the councilman, he was kind of taken by surprise by Bob when Bob brought it up, and he got a little defensive. Some kind of a, I don't know if it was a,
I'll tell you what it was called.
Was it a proclamation or something like that?
No,
what
the mayor wanted, an organization from a church organization, I believe, came to, I think it was, it started with her, Commissioner Bud, Harvey Bud. They came to him and they said, and I follow it too. And we want the city of Gainesville to be a friendly city. That was the word they used. Friendly city. And you'll be the first one in the state of Florida to be a friendly city. And what that meant was...
Okay.
Yeah. And when you talked about Commissioner Chase...
I know what it means.
Yeah. But when Commissioner Chase was talking to Bob Rose about it, he said, well, we are, you know, we're a friendly city. It's no big deal. But... I mean, we have more people right now in because of the university of people that are not citizens. So this is the first city in the state of Florida, but I think her name is Carol, and McNeil, I think, or something like that. She's the one that did investigating and went to some of these meetings, and she is the one that was stating that, yes, exactly what you said, they want these people that are non-citizens to feel comfortable in the city of Gainesville and be accepted, which is a bunch of malarkey. But a lot of them were coming from what you talked about. Mm-hmm. But that's the truth. That's where we are. Are you there? I can keep talking if you want me to. One of the things you have to remember is that we are an international city of Gainesville because of the university. And people come here from all over.